This is Chris Martin, and me and my buddy Kevin O'Connor, a.k.a. Kevin O'Everything, host an NBA podcast called The Mismatch. They call it The Mismatch because I'm awesome, and Kevin is a gigantic nerd.
No, that's not why at all, Chris. They call it The Mismatch because I have a brain, and you're a loudmouth bozo.
Good grief.
Anyway, listen to our amazing NBA podcast, The Mismatch.
Or don't. We really don't care. We're probably going to win a million awards either way.
Chris, we do care, so don't say that. Please subscribe and listen to The Mismatch only on Spotify.
Did you really call me a bozo?
This episode is brought to you by Armorall. When you want the best for your car, preparation is everything. That's why teams like Oracle Red Bull Racing use Armorall to prep their team vehicles. From interior cleaning and protectant wipes to car wash and wheel and tire cleaner, Armorall, America's number one trusted auto appearance brand, has what it takes to keep the two-time defending champions looking their best inside and out. And get this, now through May 31st, you can get $5 back when you spend $20 prepping your car like the Oracle Red Bull Racing team. All you have to do is upload your receipt to Armorall's website after you buy. Visit Armorall.com for program details and redemption. Terms apply. Armorall, chosen by champions.
It is the Ringer F1 Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. I am Kevin Clark. Lawrence Edmondson and Nate Saunders from ESPN join me in the parking lot outside the Miami Grand Prix. Yes, my voice is still hoarse. The good news is these guys are really, really, really smart, so I let them do all of the work. Here's them talking. Thank you to Nate and Lawrence for stopping by. Lawrence and Nate, join us. We're here in Miami Gardens, beautiful Miami Gardens. We saw speed for the first time on this track. We've been talking about this track for 4 years. First impressions, Lawrence.
It's pretty exciting. The walls are close, which a number of drivers found out, and the grip levels are relatively low. So I think when you get to a new track, you always get this element of drivers pushing the limits, finding out what they can do, what they can't do. And we saw a bit of that today, but I'm optimistic. I didn't know what to expect when I came here, but now I'm optimistic that we're going to get an interesting race and we may have safety cars, red flags, that kind of thing to mix things up.
Are you worried about some of the quotes that came out after the practice session? Checo Perez says there's no grip. The limestone, which is, everyone in Florida knows what limestone is, but it's basically it's our local rock here. Apparently not great for F1 tracks. The grip might be a concern. Lando Norris said that, similar comments. Is this going to be an unusual race because of that?
Yeah, but I don't see the problem there because right. It's not like one team is experiencing this, so it's unfair in any way. I remember when we went to Turkey a few years ago and the track surface was a nightmare and drivers complained. But, you still get a good race. They find a way around it. And so, drivers are always going to complain when the grip level isn't what they expect and they have to think about it and they have to go back to the engineering briefing and come up with some ideas of how to get grip from the tyres and all that kind of stuff. They don't like that, but it doesn't mean it's going to be a bad race. It doesn't mean it's going to be a disaster. As long as the track holds together, that's the only slight concern. As long as the track holds together and doesn't break up and actually stops running, which is a very extreme.
Well, Checo did say that it felt like it was coming apart a little bit yesterday. So that's something to watch, but I think it's going to stay together.
Yeah, I think so. And they did some work on it as well. So yeah. They put some work in there.
Yeah. Red Bull, obviously, nightmare of a day. Max changes gearbox. He doesn't get a lap out there. This is the type of weekend that Max Verstappen should be able to dominate. But as we know, he either wins or doesn't finish the race. What direction is that? Is that, if there's only two true outcomes here, it looks like it might be a not finish the race kind of weekend.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it is funny with Red Bull this year. Like that extreme between the two has been constant. You're right. And I don't know. I think we saw what happened in Imola and we were all like, oh, okay, well, the reliability issues are kind of done now, yeah. Right? They're all fixed.
Tip for the championship.
Yeah.
They had one good race. And we're fine. Like, oh, they're
Ferrari
championship
done,
favorites.
Red Bull yeah. Back. Like, so it's a reminder that the car's still fragile, but it's hard to say. I always feel like with this season, and when you look back at the issues that cost Verstappen finishing races, there were little signs of problems through those weekends, little issues here and there. So if you're superstitious, you kind of might think the same thing's happening here. But yeah, it's always interesting when Verstappen only gets a couple of laps in, I mean, I think that makes the weekend quite fun because they're relearning this racetrack, and you've got Verstappen kind of coming into the weekend, or coming into the proper weekend, the Saturday, Sunday, and he's still chasing mileage. So that could make it quite fun. But yeah, I mean, if you're Red Bull, you probably have a bit of a sleepless night tonight, maybe thinking about that. But I think if they're on top of it, I backed Max before the weekend. I think he'd still be the guy to win.
Having seen it now, because Nate, we talked earlier in the week and we said, oh, maybe we should do a preview. And you said, I just want to see the cars out there and just see what this looks like because it's such a new track. And there's certain things we didn't expect that came out today. What kind of car is perfect for this track? Do we know yet?
I don't think we know. I think maybe a car that hasn't been invented yet. well, I spoke to Kevin.
You mean the Andretti car?
Yeah, exactly.
2024.
I think managed to catch Kevin Magnussen in his press session this evening, just before leaving the circuit, and the joke came up. He was asked, "Do you like the bit that goes under the turnpike?" And he said, "I don't know what turnpike means."
So yeah, perfect.
So somebody said the Formula E bit, and he said, "Oh yeah, okay, the Formula E bit, because it's narrow and it's kind of it stands out as being a bit strange from what you see in an F1 circuit." So to be honest with you, I don't know, and I think that to go back to what Lauren said makes it pretty interesting because they're all learning this track as they go. As we saw with Carlos Sainz, like this, and a bunch of drivers, it wasn't just Sainz who had the off. His was probably the worst off. But it's catching people out. And I can't remember the exact quote, Lawrence might remember it, but the guys who designed the track said they wanted this to be
a mistake generator.
Yes. That was it.
Especially turns 13 through 16.
Yeah. And apparently the key to that is to make tarmac that's very unpredictable. And,
yeah.
But exactly. Hey, if it works, and if, as Lawrence said, it holds together, then I think that's going to make a great race. And I think that's what the teams are going to be trying to work out tonight is I don't think it's clear yet whether this suits Ferrari more than the Red Bull. When you look at it, you're like, well, there's long straights, there's twisty bits, etc. But I think that there's a whole other element to this race that we haven't really seen before at races.
So it's not just the mistake generator in 13 through 16 where there's apexes where you can't see around and all that stuff. That was by design. The pit lane is also quite weird.
Basically
it's blind. There are people complaining about it today. Like, how different is that from a normal track? And what happens when that gets weird?
Well, it's always concerning because essentially when you've got a pit lane exiting into more or less the racing line, you've got to create some issues. And it's tight. You know, I ran the track last night on Thursday night.
No big deal.
And yeah, I mean, it was a big deal, actually. It was thoroughly exhausting and sweaty experience. But it's so much tighter than you think through turn three. You know, I didn't realize the barriers were going to be that close. So it doesn't feel like there's that far to go. And, you know, that's a fast corner. That's the beginning of a fast corner. And the drivers are coming straight out into it from the pit lane. So, look, they'll get used to it. They'll be talking about it now in the driver's briefing with the race director as well. And maybe they'll come up with some kind of solution or something. But yeah, I mean, it's the way it is. But this track has been passed by the FIA, like all new tracks are. And I'm sure they've considered it to some extent. And it's just another thing they'll have to deal with.
Was it a fast corner for you on your jog?
It was not, because it was early on and I knew it was going to be a very sweaty and long run. And so I was taking it easy at that point.
That's why I haven't run it yet. I would have called it the slowest circuit in the history of F1 if I'd run it based on my experience. So I let Lawrence do that for ESPN. You know, I let him be the judge of it for the company.
So we finally get to have a Mercedes discussion where we're not just using hope as a strategy and saying, oh, they'll figure it out, and saying all these things that where there's no evidence to back it up. Russell looked quick today. I guess the big picture question, because every time I have a guest on this show, I ask them a Mercedes question that's way too leading, way too optimistic, and the guest has to slow me down and say, well, you know, they're still, you know, P9 or whatever it is. What do we expect about Mercedes this weekend after what you saw today?
Well, the porpoising is still an issue, and I think once everything gets turned up, they're going to be probably just off the pace of the front two. But there is definite progress there. And what they've got this weekend and what these updates are about is knocking some of the drag that they've had on that car from the very beginning off. That's what the rear wing update is all about. It's reducing the drag. And so they've got their kind of downforce drag level much more close to where it needs to be, and really where this car should be for them to run it. And so they experimented with a few different setup options today. Lewis and George took slightly different routes. It looked like George's came out a little bit better, but they were, you know, it's a real day working through it. And to then be near the top still after all that, I know we didn't see Max's best lap and all the rest of it, but to then be near the top is promising. But don't get carried away just yet, would be my advice.
I'm going to try to get carried away. Ferrari, at some point, when do we get worried about Carlos Sainz's ability to stay on the track? Because it's not Mazepin, but you know, it's entering and it's not even Grosjean, okay? But it's entering territories where we can start to make fun of every single week. Carlos Sainz can't stay on the track. What happens if Ferrari, if that doesn't get solved?
Look, I mean, I'm concerned about it, and I'm really, really surprised about it, because the one thing we said going into this season when we were talking about Sainz and Leclerc is, well, Leclerc is incredibly quick, but he's a little bit error-prone, and Sainz is this guy who's just going to get the job done. And it's just, it's gone the other way, and it must be in his head. It must be a psychological thing, and I don't know how you get out of that as a driver. You know, we've seen it with other drivers before. I think it does require some kind of reset. The best reset, of course, is a win, a podium or whatever, but the pressure's going up because that Ferrari is capable of winning races. And Sainz, of course, still hasn't had a win in his F1 career. But even at the moment, kind of getting on a podium, I have my doubts about, just because he's making these errors. I mean, what do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting when you look back at like Bottas at Mercedes and even Daniel Ricciardo last year, like he got stuck into that funk of not being able to get a result. And he felt like he could get it. We all felt he could get it. But, you know, and it happens a lot in sports, doesn't it? Where somebody, I don't know, you're maybe lacking a bit of confidence, you're overthinking things a little bit. But sometimes when you just get stuck in that funk or you get stuck into a rhythm of mistakes like this. So I am worried about it, like Lawrence. I think Sainz did come into the season for me. I mean, I thought he was an outside bet to be a championship contender when I thought Ferrari had the car, because I thought he looked so good last year. And I think that I hope it doesn't turn into a Bottas-style situation where he's constantly trying to chase up to a quicker and much more consistent teammate in a good car. Because at this stage in the season, I think his championship is still salvageable. It will still take something quite remarkable to turn it around in terms of Charles and Max, but not insurmountable. If this is still six races time, you write it off. You know, if you've still got to have that glimmer of hope at this point. So I think, and to go back to the Ricciardo example, when he had, before Monza last year, you know, he looked dead and buried in terms of his confidence versus Lando. Just takes one weekend where a few things go your way, you seize an opportunity and you get that win. So if Sainz can get that, I think Sainz has always been very much a confidence guy. You saw that when he was at Renault early in his career, and when he was at Toro Rosso as well. He could be very peaky based on confidence, and I think Lawrence kind of alluded to it. He can get into his own head quite a bit. So I really hope for his sake, because I really like Carlos. He's one of the, he's a really nice guy to interview. He's just, you know, just a genuine guy to talk to. And this seemed like such a big opportunity for him. And I think as soon as, I always say, I think there's two types of skills that drivers need in F1. You've got to be either good at driving a bad car or great at driving a great car. And those are two very different traits. And I think we can see, like with Russell, for example, he's clearly very good at getting the best out of a very, very bad car. You know, you have to drive in certain ways. But the mindset completely changes when you have the front-running car. And if you're not doing the best with it, I feel like you must feel like you're letting yourself down. And for Carlos, he's been waiting his whole career for this opportunity, and currently it's slipping through his fingers. I don't know if you saw the replay of him after the crash, but he was kind of hitting the steering wheel a bit. Like, you can see the frustrations there. I think it's not quite disaster point yet for him. He's done it probably at the best point in the weekend. You know, if he'd done that in qualifying like he did in Imola, then it obviously has a massive impact in the weekend. But pretty worrying for him. And I hope that maybe if we do have a mixed up race, it can help push him up the order a bit and maybe give him a big result that he needs.
This episode is brought to you by Armorall. When you want the best for your car, preparation is everything. That's why teams like Oracle Red Bull Racing use Armorall to prep their team vehicles. From interior cleaning and protectant wipes to car wash and wheel and tire cleaner, Armorall, America's number one trusted auto appearance brand, has what it takes to keep the two-time defending champions looking their best inside and out. And get this, now through May 31st, you can get $5 back when you spend $20 prepping your car like the Oracle Red Bull Racing team. All you have to do is upload your receipt to Armorall's website after you buy. Visit Armorall.com for program details and redemption. Terms apply. Armorall, chosen by champions. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I was thinking about how if you're a new American fan, you started watching in March and you came here, you got to see on your first practice day all the porpoising. You got to see Red Bull not finish, and you got to see Carlos Sainz wreck. You got to see all the narratives. It's like going to see Rolling Stones and they just play the hits. Like, this is, if you described three things about the 2022 F1 season, you'd probably mention that. And every F1 fan who's new got to see it. Having said that, what's different about this race? Because a lot of people who came today and they saw cars on a track for the first time ever. And I think there were drivers yesterday who said this is different, special, whatever. Some of it was just ticket talk, you know, calling it the Super Bowl of F1 or whatever. But having been to so many of these, what's different about this week?
I think the amount of champagne and sun loungers going around, it's a different vibe. It is a bit more like a music festival or something, like a high-end, you know, high ticket price music festival, rather than a motor race. Having said that, you know, I think there are still some great places to watch. I saw a friend of a friend show me a video of a car going through 1, 2, and 3 from that grandstand there, and it's a great view. But it's, you know, I don't think this is necessarily the best place to watch F1 cars.
Sure.
You know,
I don't think it is.
We're not talking, you know, Silverstone, Maggots, Beckett's Chapel. We're not talking Eau Rouge. But it's a nice little taster. And you know what? If you're there and you're partly there just for the experience of being there, you know, it's a perfectly fine place. The weather's good so far to watch motorcars.
Do you think drivers like being here, Nate?
I do. You really get the sense from drivers that they've really enjoyed this week. So I used to laugh when F1 said we need to create a Super Bowl 23 weeks of the year. Because I used to say the great thing about the Super Bowl is it only happens once a year. But we've heard that said quite a lot this weekend, and it does certainly feel like F1's kind of pulled out the stops to make this event special. Now, it is the first one, so I think it's easier to make the first event special than it is the 8th or 9th event of a race. But this one has felt great. You know, they obviously had the opening ceremony, and there is something about this place. When you walk in here, it just there's a buzz about it, and I think the drivers have felt that. You know, I mean, McLaren have been doing stuff for James Corden today, JJ sure. and TJ Watt were here. It's not like celebrities don't come to races, but it feels like there's a lot coming this weekend, and they're all engaging with teams in different ways. They've all got great, you know, funky helmet designs. Lando's got the basketball one. Danny Ricciardo's got my favorite helmet I've ever seen, where he's the pet detective from Ace Ventura. So they're all leaning into it, and you can tell that. It was funny today because I almost felt like the Friday practice was almost like an afterthought after the week sure. we'd had. You know, we'd had all this stuff. We'd had Brady playing golf with Hamilton, all that stuff. And then I had to remind myself, like, oh yeah, we're here to watch them on the race.
The Super Bowl is exactly like that. On Sunday, you're like, wait, there's a game? There were so many great parties on Friday.
This is why we're here, yeah. So it has felt like that. And yeah, the drivers are really enjoying themselves. And you know, once they get in the car, it's another race weekend. But you can really tell when they've been interviewed, you know, they've all been grinning, they've all been enjoying themselves. So yeah, I think they love it. And I think this is going to go down as one of their favorite events of the year.
Sure.
Whether it goes down as one of their favorite tracks of the year, I agree with Lawrence. I'm not sure it's going to be up in that same category, but the event might be so good for them that it's, the vibe of it kind of keeps them coming back every year.
So the news of the day, I put news in quotation marks here, is I was surprised to see Lewis Hamilton walk in, he scootered in to the press conference wearing 3 watches, every necklace he owned, everything. And basically everything that was in his jewelry box was on him because the FIA has said they were going to start banning that. He said he has 2 piercings that can't be removed. One of them is in his nose. One of them is in an undetermined place that he did not. He said he could not reveal. So we'll quickly move on from that. And then everybody else said that this was overreach by the FIA, that Seb Vettel wore underwear to protest some of the new clothing regulations. This is going to get worked out, right, guys?
Yes, it is, I think. But it is fascinating. There's so much more to it than just what it seems. Because, you know, this jewelry rule, this underwear rule has been in the FIA's regulations for as long as most of these drivers have been racing, I think. So
it's a re-emphasis. The NFL loves doing that.
And it's a kind of reminder that actually we are going to take action here. But it does seem, certainly the jewelry stuff seems pointed at one particular yes. driver. And let's be honest, Lewis Hamilton and the FIA have not been on good terms whatsoever since the end of last year, for all the reasons we know. I think there is an element of that. I think that's coming through, and I think that's the way Lewis sees it. You know, for Lewis to turn up and make that statement, he was basically saying there, like, guys, don't forget to ask me about the jewelry. I've got something to say on this. And he was very clear. He said, fine, if you want to take my jewelry out, I won't race. I'll go and do something else in Miami. Yeah. Nick DeVries can have the car. And and that's such a big statement. It's very rare you hear a Formula One driver say that.
I agree with all of that on Hamilton. It was interesting talking to some of the other drivers as well, because this is actually, it has become like a story about Lewis, but there were two interesting quotes. Pierre Gasly said... I think he wears a cross around his neck, and he said he's never raced without that. He'd feel very uncomfortable racing without it. You can imagine why. And Kevin Magnussen, again, the press session I mentioned, he said this is the first time since he got married he's raced without his wedding ring on. And he said it didn't feel right. He said if something happened to me in the car, I'd want my wedding ring on. It wouldn't feel right to have it on. And he said, if I did get burnt, I can deal with a tiny burn on my wedding ring finger. So a lot of the drivers are kind of support Lewis on this, and they think it is kind of petty. And I agree with Lawrence. Like, it does seem, it seems a weird time to board it up, and it does seem aimed at Lewis. But I think Lewis is, he's in a good position with it, because a lot of the other drivers kind of think it's nonsense. And on Vettel, I mean, if there was any evidence needed that Vettel's kind of just thrown in the towel on, I don't think the guys, he's just like, I don't give a damn now about anything here. I feel like he's just kind of like, this is stupid. I loved him walking down the paddock in the underwear.
He's amazing.
You can tell he's kind of just saying, look guys, this is really stupid. And
he's amazing. I mean, he went to Carroll City yesterday to talk to kids where they produced many Hurricanes great, Santana Moss, Rick Ross, the rapper, from Carroll City. Like, that's the place you go to establish Miami cred. And he talked to the community there. He wore a global warming shirt to the opening on Wednesday. Like, he's entered, he was already in a different phase of his career, but it feels like this is just him now.
It does. And I find him so endearing now as a person. Yeah. I mean, I think when he was at Red Bull, I think whenever a driver is dominating F1, it's easy to dislike them, or maybe dislike's the wrong word, but it's easy to root against them. And then at Ferrari, it was frustrating when he was there, because they had those 2 years when they could have won the championship. And we didn't really hear much of his activism. And if we did, it was kind of, we didn't hear it that often. At Aston, I guess he's been away from the front and he's had a chance to do a lot more of this stuff. And yeah, he's talking about it all the time. And, I think he's always the guy. I don't think he cares about the ramifications of saying stuff. And Lewis has always been similar for that.
Absolutely.
He just says, a bit like Lewis with the jewelry today, is like, well, what are you going to do? Are you really going to tell a 7-time world champion he can't race? And, Vettel's in the same boat. So yeah, big fan of Vettel. I think if he does walk away from F1 at the end of the year, that'll be a big loss for F1. Because at the moment, he's kind of probably the most rootable, root-forable? I think I'm making up English words now.
Likeable. You can just go likeable.
That was such an easier word to use, so I don't know why I didn't use that. Vettel, at the moment, I'm a big fan.
So, Gunther Steiner talked yesterday about some of the new race leadership and how maybe there was, I don't know how you'd phrase it. There's a feeling out process over the first couple of weeks, and that, are these rule changes maybe just miscommunication between race leadership and drivers? Is it just them putting in stupid rules to feel powerful? Like, what is this?
It seems a little bit like the race directors, or mainly Niels Wittig, the main one we've had so far, just laying down the law a bit and saying, this is a new era now. It's no longer the Michael Massey era. This is my era.
That seems stupid.
And things have changed. But it's also very strange, because I remember at the start of the year, some of the drivers saying that they hadn't had a sit-down meeting with him yet. And, this was ahead of the first race. You're like, how has that not happened by now? The race director is so important. I remember Charlie Whiting, he was so successful in that role because everybody liked him and he was so approachable. All the drivers, if they had an issue, they could go straight to Charlie, talk to him. The teams, the door was always open. The emails were always answered, apparently usually within about 2 or 3 minutes. It was remarkable, whatever time of day. And it's a very different approach that they're taking. I think it's the wrong approach. I think the way that Charlie did it was the right way. Of course, you're never going to replace Charlie. He is irreplaceable. But I feel like they've gone too far the other way. And I don't really understand why. And to me, it does seem political. I'd love the FIA to turn around and say otherwise, but the FIA, from a communications point of view, are staying incredibly quiet on all of this. They just send out the statement and they just say, read the statement. That's it.
Two quick ones for you. We'll get you out of here. First one, is there a mid-pack team you saw today that is going to do better than we think?
I'm always rooting for Haas in these situations. And we were actually talking about it in the media center with a few people. I don't know if Mick has got a handle on the car, but I think K-Mag was top 10 in both sessions. I could see them kind of pushing up to that kind of third whoever the third team is here. So I'd say them. Maybe that's not such a surprise anymore, Haas. I don't know if that's kind of
no, loud. It definitely is.
But I think, but from what Magnussen was saying, and from just the general vibe of the team down there, I think Haas are going to have a really strong weekend.
One same question.
I was looking a little bit. I've only just glanced at the long run data, and Alpine looked fairly strong. So long run data is always a better gauge, really, of what's going on than single laps. And yeah, the Alpine kind of looks fairly similar to the Mercedes. So, you know, I think those two could actually end up in a scrap. As much as I'd like to see the Mercedes up there with the top two, and I feel like they're going to be closer, I feel like, yeah, that third spot is still going to be what they're fighting over.
I can't think of anything more valuable than a race prediction on a podcast that posts 15 hours for qualifying. But we're going to do it. What do you guys think happens Sunday?
In terms of the top three for the race?
Sure.
Tomorrow's going to be fascinating from the Red Bull perspective with the car issues, but I'm going to say Verstappen wins, Leclerc second. I think something that Lawrence said earlier was pretty accurate. I don't know whether Sainz is in the right mindset right now to finish in the top three. So I'd put a Mercedes there, probably Hamilton. I think a weekend after he's been told that, you know, all this nonsense.
Or DeVries. DeVries could be there.
Yeah. Whoever's in the car that isn't George Russell. But this, you know, not to dwell too much on Hamilton, but this is kind of one of those weekends where the performance is always very, very good after it. You know, he's got a point to prove. Brazil last year, it was one of the most impressive things I've seen when I've covered a race. That was obviously very, very different, but he felt like the FIA was out to get him that weekend. And I think this weekend, for different reasons, he feels the same way. So yeah, why not? Lewis back up there, and happy to revisit this in 48 hours and see that I'm spectacularly wrong on that call.
Lawrence?
I'm going to go bold and say science victory.
Whoa!
Yeah. Gets it all right, like turns a corner, turns a page in his season, takes a victory. Lewis Hamilton second and Sergio Perez third. And we're going to
wow.
see. I just feel like this place is going to offer up something different. And I don't even know if I'm being dramatic enough there. I don't know whether I should put in a midfield team in the podium, but I just got a feeling something's going to happen here and it's going to be different. And I hope I'm right, but I'll probably be wrong.
But this does, like, Baku
yeah.
has always thrown up surprise results. I think this is going to be a Baku style weekend. And I mean, the good Baku, you know, we had two or three good Bakus and we had two bad Bakus. I think those ones which were just pure chaos.
Yeah.
I think we could have that here because, you know, the track's new, and as we talked about, there's all those issues with, you know, the grip, the tarmac, yeah. etc. So that is, it is a recipe for a great weekend. So if you're a midfield team right now, I think this is a perfect weekend to be a midfield team with a fairly quick car, because you might be up there come the end of the race.
We mentioned all the glamour of the race. We've spent the last 22 minutes in a grass parking lot adjacent to a what looks like a bunch of bulldozers here. So thanks for joining me. See you guys tomorrow.
Thank you very much.